Layla, I want to thank you for having this conversation, even though it's pretty sad that here we are a few years after the Trayvon Martin shooting, and we're talking about the same old stuff. But I think it's important to keep having these conversations until, you know, we can hopefully live in a society that's less racist and less dangerous than it is right now. So how have you been? Surviving?
Yes. Yeah. That's the best I can answer.
Yeah, yeah. It's really quite a bizarre situation that we're facing right now. I remember when we last spoke about this issue, the Trayvon Martin trial had not yet begun. I think it was just like after the shooting happened. So we haven't really had a chance to talk, to even like decompress about what happened after the shooting and the fact that George Zimmerman is not walking around free as a bird and, you know, all that other.
Yes, I actually address, the lecture is available now on YouTube, what is it, Kwantlen Polytechnicum University in British Columbia. Mm-hmm. I gave a talk there last October. So, and I specifically, it came right after, soon after the verdict for Zimmerman came out. And so I addressed that in depth. So for people who are interested, you can listen to the lecture. But my point in that discussion was that it is not an aberration. It is not a surprise. It is part of a system that reconfirms not the criminality of the act of killing, but the criminality of someone who belongs to a category who is not allowed to kill, to or to consume that which has been privatized. And taken away from other classes of humans and non-humans. So the criminality of the murder is not the question, because it is not even seen. For example, it's like if you kill a wolf, you're not going to be persecuted because, well, you know, wolves are seen as a threat to the domesticated animals and the land that has been taken by the human, and by the humans who are attributed the humanity and the agency to consume, to control, and therefore have the right to kill. And so, this is the problem. The problem is not even the idea of teaching children to be racist or to be sadists when it comes to animals. The idea is to show them, to train them from early childhood to know their place in this food chain and in the niche, whether they constitute the resources that are disposable, that are usable, that have the right to live if they perform according to that prescribed role that they were given in that structure, in the hierarchy of resources, or not. And if they don't, if they challenge, if they threaten the interests of the hierarchy, then there's no problem killing them. This is kind of a reconfirmation. These acts are not an aberration. They're a reconfirmation of this narrative that structures our socioeconomic possibilities and rights.
Right, and I think many people would say, oh, well, what about black people who have made it in this society, black people who are successful? But I think what you just said kind of just reinforces the actual situation that we're living under. Like, the black people who in this society who can function in a certain way, they're seen as non-threatening, and they are able to perform at a certain high level where they're, you know, they're participating as consumers, as people who are just like, you know, very active in holding up this society and contributing to the institutions. Like, you have black police officers and black politicians and things like that. But if you are not able to occupy a category of, like, a consumer or someone who's, like, quote-unquote, what's the word I'm looking for? Productive?
Productive? And yeah. Being the human resource.
Right. So there's a lot, but there's so many black people who are not seen as productive. And even if you are, you can kind of very easily be moved from, like, one position to the other. Like, the President Obama's professor friend who was arrested right in front of his house a few years ago after the neighbors called the police on him. So we can see that even if you do make it, quote-unquote, just your very physical presence can be seen as a threat. And, like, the police don't know that guy was a professor. I mean, he just looked like another black guy. But I want to reinforce what you were talking about earlier about, like, the fact that, unfortunately, many people are seen as almost, you know, just like things, like animals. So I'm just going to just review these cases really fast just to give people an idea of the seriousness of this problem that we're facing, and that it's not an aberration like you're talking about. This is not an aberration. This is just kind of like the way things are. So first of all, there's the case of Jordan Davis, who was shot a few years ago in Jacksonville, Florida. He was 17 years old, and he was killed by 45-year-old Michael Dunn, who claimed that he saw a gun in the back of Davis's SUV after Michael Dunn approached them and asked them to turn down some loud rap music. And after they refused to turn down the music, Michael Dunn shot into the back of the SUV about 10 times, striking Jordan Davis 3 times and killing him. Then we have Renisha McBride, who was 19, who was shot and killed by 54-year-old Theodore Wafer on his front porch after she was lost in the suburbs of Detroit and came onto his porch asking for assistance. He opened the door and immediately blew her away. Then we have this incident that happened just a few months ago that everyone probably knows about. This is Eric Garner, who was killed by Justin D'Amico and Daniel Pantaleo, who are 2 police officers. They assaulted and choked Eric Garner in broad daylight. The coroner's office found later that his cause of death was the chokehold and the chest compression, even though the police department tried to say that the chokehold was not the cause of death. We've heard many times that Eric Garner was on the street selling loose cigarettes, which is illegal, but we haven't heard that he was also employed by the city park department as a horticulturalist. That's something that has never come up ever. Then we have John Crawford III, who was shot and killed inside of a Walmart on August 5th while holding a toy gun. And according to the surveillance footage seen by his family and his family's lawyer, no warning was given by the officers before they opened fire, and the Ohio Attorney General's office is refusing to release the footage to the public. Then we have the case of Officer Daniel Holtzclaw, a 27-year-old police officer in Oklahoma, who is facing 16 counts of first-degree rape, sexual battery, and forcible oral sodomy, and indecent exposure and stalking for pulling over at least 8 black women while on duty and forcing them to expose themselves to him, perform sex acts on him, and he actually forcefully raped at least 2 of these women. All of the women were black women, as I said, ranging in age from 34 to 58. And we also have this, I saw this thing on this Facebook page called Cop Block, and there's these different cases where police said that men who were boys who were handcuffed somehow managed to commit suicide by shooting themselves. So I'm just going to read out the names of these people. There's Chavez Carter from Arkansas, Jesus Huerta from North Carolina, Tyree Woodson in Maryland, and Victor White in Louisiana. And all of these people, they were handcuffed in the back of a police car or handcuffed next to a police car. And the police are coming out later and claiming that they somehow got a gun that they hadn't found that was hidden on their person and came up and shot themselves while in police custody. So So when we take a look at all of these cases, and you know, there's a bunch of cases that I've left out that I just couldn't find the information on fast enough. But I feel like this kind of paints a picture of what you were saying earlier, that this is kind of the norm that we're living under. This is, these cases happen a lot. And the question I kind of have is, well, why do white people hate and fear black people so much? Like, where does this come from? Like, and why?
Well, it's, I mean, the whole, okay, it's really great that you outlined, obviously there are a lot of names missing, but you outlined quite a few cases here, because they obviously subscribe to a certain kind of second half 20th century and beginning 21st century narrative. And so it's, since I'm working with narratives as part, as something that reconfirms and authorizes the reenactment of a structure of socio-economic and socio-environmental culture. So how it differs from the narrative before the, prior to mid-20th century, is that prior to mid-20th century, we were still, well, humanity, civilized humanity, was still rooting its legitimacy in the anthropocentric kind of evolutionary theory that, humanity evolved and some races, have succeeded better, went further, became, well, there's always like, this kind of underlying quality attached to the description of the better races, right? And so it was very important for humanity then to separate, like to find these exclusive qualities, supposed exclusive qualities that separated us from animals, precisely to construct the legitimacy for pain, for inducing pain and exploitation. So in that narrative then, and again, like we look at what Darwin based his, he was inspired by Thomas Malthus, and Thomas Malthus, spoke about, explained the overpopulation and the primitive yellow and red and black races, that also somehow included the Irish that were not British, and kind of explained their mechanistic kind of instincts to, like animals, they live simply, they eat when they have, and then they forget themselves, they have sex, and when they've had sex, obviously, poor little things didn't think of it, babies popped out, they had overpopulation, not enough food, then they die off. But the higher race, the Anglo-Saxon and a few Europeans, according to Thomas Malthus, did not have that, did not participate in that because they had, higher intelligence. Language separated these humans from other humans and then language itself from animality. So, this whole narrative based and rooted on difference is not a simple thing that you go to people and tell them, oh, you're better off, okay? So this is, I could go to anyone on the street, to my neighbor's kids, every day tell them, oh, you're better off. You're so good, you're much more intelligent than everyone else. You deserve to live in a castle. Well, it's a joke, right? Because no matter what I say, the structure of access to possibilities, to economic possibilities, are dictated by someone else. They're not dictated by me and by my words. So The point is that for this narrative to work, there has to be a very solid socioeconomic structure that is based on domestication and civilized colonization of land and living and non-living resources, that then makes the narrative meaningful and each reinforces the other. Reinforcing that narrative within the socioeconomic and socioenvironmental structure where the relationships of humans are based on difference, the relationship of humans to the non-human people is based on difference. The relationship between men and women is based on difference, where there is no room for anyone who does not identify with these labor categories. Labor because it's literally, you labor children, human resources. So it is a socioeconomic class. Who's going to give birth? Who's going to inseminate? Who's going to control? Who's going to benefit from the labor and product of the resources that you're going to breed, human and non-human, right? And so in this respect, the post-mid 20th century reality with all the decolonization of, supposed decolonization, but, you know, in terms of winning, the right to kind of to have nation states instead of being colonies around Asia and Africa and the rest of the world, meant that something in the narrative had to change, because now we are claiming to be living up to new ideals of equality between human races. Okay, but since it's still based on that old narrative and an old structure of lack of access to resources, this is where now these acts that were the norm before, prior to mid-20th century, are now, they don't conform to the ideals that are being spoken of, and the schizophrenia of the reenactment of the totally, you know, reverse. So they stand out. And now you get people saying, oh my goodness, oh how brutal, oh how surprising, in the 21st century. And it's hypocritical, because it's not surprising. It's so tragically not surprising, because it only reconfirms the reality, and it stands out because now you are forced to address it and to try to make it as an aberration. So obviously the first thing is you're going to blame the victims, because the whole class is guilty. The whole class should not be claiming to the same rights of humanity. But the narrative tells us, well, you know, it's fluid, it's 21st, it's post-century, it's postmodernism, reality is different, we can now listen, we can have a dialogue. And what is not being addressed is that your dialogue remains chatter if you are not addressing the brutality with which you exploit us, all of us. And I include non-human people in our struggle. We are all exploited, but obviously on different levels. But the world is not meant to be living like that. Right. And so early death, madness, and then shootings like that, and the getting away with it, only reconfirms that structure. And then another thing I would like to point to, like I was checking out the minute, for example, especially with Michael Brown, when finally the name of the officer who shot him became known, they were forced because hackers, you know, went and, you know, threatened and da-da-da. And so finally they released the name of the officer who shot him. And now when we have footage to show that this is not so, the story is different. It's almost like they are beginning to depict. I looked, like, where would your average person go to find out about, you know, a case like this? Wikipedia, right? What does Wikipedia say? Oh, the officer had, what is it, troubled childhood. Okay?
Right.
We're surprised. So it's not a problem of a system. It's not a problem of a really tightly knit system of socioeconomics and production of knowledge and reproduction of knowledge and culture. It becomes a problem of identifying a class of those. Does that mean that everyone who had, like, so troubled childhood leads to aberration? Well, most of the world, I mean, childhood in civilization, by definition, is troubled.
Right.
You know? And so then the narrative frames it again as something individual.
And there's also this, the victim blaming thing that you mentioned earlier, and the fact that, you know, the dominant class almost automatically puts the victim in the category of guilty. And this is, like, kind of breathtaking to notice happen in real time, even though it's happened, like, so often before. But mm-hmm. seeing even the New York Times, which is supposed to be this liberal, you know, left-wing newspaper, come out with this article claiming that Michael Brown was troubled and he, you know, smoked weed sometimes and, you know, maybe he stole something. And people started juxtaposing that with their coverage of that boy who killed all those kids in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And totally different narratives. I mean, the way they described this kid in Connecticut who you know, murdered children was that, oh, you know, he wanted to have a good relationship with his mother, but he couldn't. You know, he played video games. He was quiet. He was shy.
Bad motherhood. Yeah. Right. Bad mothering.
It's always this thing where black and brown people are, like, inherently bad. But when white people commit these horrible crimes, they, you know, there's something happened to them. You know, they're not this way usually. I mean, something tragic happened to them. This is a total aberration. You know, what's going on with that, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And then, because, of course, it's, again, a socioeconomic class. And socioeconomic class where even poor, middle-class white people are obviously still a separate class from poor or middle-class black people. And it's actually Sister Soldier addresses this really intensely in this debate she had with senators, discussing Senator Bradley and his invitation to have the black folk and the white folk should go on this road of healing together. And her response is, well, none of us are there where Senator Bradley is. And you are making a moral appeal to a country that does not have a moral conscience. And the moral conscience comes with a desire. If you are going to face all these acts of whether it is black people committing crimes or against black people or black people committing crimes against white people, or white people committing crimes against anyone else. If you are looking again at the picture where you are striving for a world without murder, you are obviously going to approach these cases with compassion for the whole situation that led. You are going and compassion because you need to understand. It's not compassion like forgiveness, kumbaya, like I love you, my killer, you know, the Stockholm syndrome. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a deep understanding of where it went wrong and how to remedy so that the killer does not kill and the killed ones will that, you know, people belonging to that class, where it is consistently that they are being injured, emotionally injured, psychologically injured, physically, fatally, that it should stop. Okay, and so the problem then, of course, is that the civilized society, it does not strive towards wilderness, towards self-abolition, the abolition of the civilized hierarchy, of lack of access of huge classes of resources to independent food and community building. This is not the goal. And so if this is not the goal, then obviously there will always be a double standard where the consumer class is the one that will be favored, is the one that will receive empathy, is the one that will demand understanding and empathy. And those who are categorized as the human labor or resources to be consumed, then you don't need, they're a priori dangerous, because obviously in domestication, no human or non-human animal will willfully succumb to the lack of independence, to the lack of community, and to being exploited and consumed by your domesticator. Okay? So it requires apathy. And so therefore, a priori, regardless, I've heard people debate every time there is a shooting or a killing, interracial shooting or killing, and obviously, actually, Melissa Harris Perry, in her recent 16, when is it? Actually, I have the note here. Melissa Harris Perry on MSNBC on the 16th of August discusses that in America, in the U.S., since 2006 to 2012, a white officer kills at least two black people per week. Hmm. Okay? And this is just like, we're not talking about other crimes. We're not talking about, you know, crimes like Renisha McBride, because that was not an officer shooting involved. We're just talking about white police officers shooting black people.
Wow. Okay?
And so, when you... the people's reaction usually, oh, let's see if the person was violent. Oh, wait, let's see. Maybe he was in drugs and erratic and threatening. So it's expected even when, and so every, you know, then they wait for the exams and and there's all this discussion. Did he have drugs? Was she drunk? Was she of loose manners? Was she dressed to provoke to be shot in the face?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You know? And it's like, by the time the results come, it doesn't matter. They have already been tried in this system, in the cultural system, in the paradigm that reproduces the cultural and the knowledge and the schema with which we, from which we operate. You know, and so a priori, they do not receive that compassion, and it's disposable resources, unfortunately. In domestication, in civilization, this will be the case. And so to address the question, it entails for the people who are the consumers of this system, who benefit, regardless of how little or how much, to give up those benefits and those privileges, that access to the abuse of humans and non-humans around the world. And this they are not ready to do.
Oh, of course not. And here's one thing also I wanted to get your thoughts,
yes,
on. There's an article that came out on thinkprogress.org not so long ago, and there was a study that was conducted where they presented white people with two sets of information. One set of information was true and the other set of information was false, but of course the people didn't know that. They told people on one hand that African Americans were overrepresented in the criminal justice system, you know, saying that they were being arrested more incarcerated. And then
I saw that one.
Right, it's crazy, yeah. Right? And then on the other hand, they said to people, black people are underrepresented in the criminal justice system. So the surprising thing about the study is that the white people who were presented with the information that blacks are disproportionately targeted, they were more likely to support harsh criminal justice policies than when they were told that there were fewer black people in the criminal justice system. So what are your thoughts on this? Like, where does this kind of pathology come from? Why? I mean, because it almost seems to be sort of sadistic. You know what I mean? Like, people are saying, you know, do people not realize that black people are sort of a oppressed minority? Or is it, where is this sort of, I can only call it sadism. I mean, where is it coming from?
I know. It is sadistic. And it's puzzling, actually. To me, it's puzzling. To what extent is it conscious? And to what extent is it not conscious? It seems when we all play our roles in this hierarchy, it's not conscious. And the intentionality strikes me when somebody refuses. Like, if I refuse to pretend that everything is fine, then I see like this kind of an intentional almost plotting going on, You know, plotting and ganging up. And ganging up, of course, it could be said, well, you know, people, in, you know, ganging up, it's like mentality of the mob. They get like, you know, these pheromones or whatever, you know, like shared in the air, hormones. And so, you know, it's like they're still, it's not, you know, mob mentality is not a conscious decision. It is a conscious strategy, I believe, to keep the system as it is. And obviously, comparative studies always reveal this, because then I see Europeans with their European values of humanism laughing and scoffing at, you know, oh, look at you in North America, like still savages, you know, 1500s, you're stuck there, you know. Right. Race issues and da-da-da. We are post-racial. Look at our... yes, I agree that the way the domestication and the civilization mechanism works in Western Europe, Northern Europe, Eastern Europe, Asia, Africa, Latin America, North America, like, they're different in the specifics, because the specifics is what makes the machine works. But the what fuels the machine and the final end of the machine is exactly the same. And this is the problem, that instead of bickering about the details, and this is the and throwing dust in the eyes with every case of such murder that is then taken apart, like, oh, let's look at the life of the victim, at the life of the, you know, killer, at the lives involved. Did they matter? Did they not matter? Oh, and it's like a race socioeconomic structure in North America. In Western Europe, it's nationalism, it's ethnicity, it's former colonies. They didn't have slavery, or they weren't as involved, let's say, in the whole slavery program from Africa. But nonetheless, you know, they were involved in a different kind of socioeconomic strength. They were colonizing sur place, like right there. They would go to the homes. Like here, they imported people. They kidnapped people from elsewhere. There they went to their places, okay? And so then brandishing these differences at each other and saying, the picture is much more complicated, we don't have race. And then North Americans say, oh, but you have colonies and da-da-da, and you're imperialist. And then, of course, like, you know, trying to economically build an empire itself based on that model is the whole problem. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a point about the racism that exists, you know, in Europe and Northern Africa, and in the Middle East. Like, definitely, I can definitely understand what you're saying, because I saw some articles recently about anti-black racism in that area. There was a football match in which northern country, northern African country was this? Not, it's next to Libya. It's to the right of Libya. What is that country? Oh my gosh.
Tunis, Algeria.
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 So yeah, there was a football match in Algeria, and there was a sub-Saharan African guy, or a Southern African guy, player, who had something thrown at his head by one of the Arabs in the stands, and it killed him. I mean, he's dead. And this is kind of echoes what's going on in Libya right now, where people from Southern Africa are being persecuted. Also in Israel, there are the migrants that are coming in, and also the Ethiopian Jews who are terribly persecuted there.
Absolutely.
And I remember living in Germany, there's this kind of caste system, like within black culture, where black people from the United States and black people who are mixed with white are kind of, you know, more generally accepted. And, oh, you're from the U.S., oh, you're cool, and we want to hang out with you. But then if you're African from Africa, they're kind of like, oh, well, you know, we don't know, and it's a different dynamic. And this is like all throughout Europe. This anti-black or anti-African racism is definitely there. But like you said, it's a different, and their racism is different in the specific stuff for sure, definitely.
Yes, but the problem, of course, is that it is based and rooted in exactly the same paradigm of extraction of livelihood and the right to extract the energy and the resource from the resources at whatever cost, and that cost then gets covered up. And this is the basis of economics, the socio-environmental economics, which are then actually hidden by the symbolic economic system, so that we don't see the real price, the real cost of energy, of suffering, everything that goes into maintaining this system, over reproduction of humanity, over consumption by certain groups of that humanity, of everyone else's energy. All that is being hidden by the symbolic culture, by the representation of coins and monetary systems that have no meaning in reality, because this paradigm is a parasitic paradigm that is based on, you know, extraction to the end. And,
right.
And then the narrative, the cultural and symbolic narrative, then tries to cover up the brutality. But the pain is so real for those who are suffering. So Ferguson is like it reminds me of Rodney King. It's when the brutality is so unbearable, and when there is enough of that, of members of that class that just cannot take it anymore, then it overpowers the symbolic veil. It tears it apart, and it shows this is the truth of what we are, how we live. And the problem is, since it is based on white supremacy, the narrative itself, regardless of whether European cultures are based on different details and dynamics, or they call them differently than North American, in the end, the lower you are in the hierarchy, the less there is going to be empathy towards you, because it is legitimate to abuse you. And that is why in that experiment, it is perfectly normal in this sick system. And I literally mean sick. It is not it is not healthy in terms of as a cultural strategy for survival. It's not healthy emotionally and psychologically. It's crazy, but it is totally logical for people to see that if a punitive system is going to be incarcerating more white people, it is not just. And if it's going to be incarcerating more black people, then we feel safe.
Right.
Because this is the truth of it, and it is not, the truth is known regardless of how we call it.
Right. And speaking of that, people just kind of standing by and seeing others be penalized and thinking that it's okay. There's this case in St. Paul, Minnesota, that mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about real fast. This to me was just, unbelievable. And having been doing alternative media for some number of years now, it's sort of like I've seen all different types of things. You know, I watched like the beheading videos and all different types of stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I feel like I had such a visceral reaction to this video more than most things I've seen because, well, not just because, but part of the fact was, you're in a public area where people are walking past. And like you mentioned to me earlier when we were talking before we started recording, like his kids were there too. And I'm going to play audio of this so people can hear it.
I would like to mention one thing.
Yeah.
Is that when I reposted it, it's one of the things that consistently does not get a single sign of attention.
Right.
People just...
Right.
They're not interested. It's just hanging
right.
there. I'm like, does anybody care? Well, it only sadly reconfirms. And then we'll talk about what else got attention.
right. So I'm going to play the audio.
Play this.
So what's your business with me right now?
I want to find out who you are and what the problem was.
There is no problem. That's the thing.
So talk to me. Let me know.
And let
you
know. Why do I have to let you know who I am? Who I am isn't the problem.
Because that's what police do when they get called.
Well, I don't have to let you.
People.
Well, I know my rights, first off. Secondly, I don't have to let you know who I am if I hadn't broken any laws. I told him, I'm going to New Horizons to pick up my kids at 10 o'clock. I was sitting there for 10 minutes. Fully.
Okay.
Like, not before he walked
thank
up to me or anything.
Thank you for
he walked up to me a minute after and got irate with me. So first off, that's a public area. And if there's no sign that doesn't say this is a private area, you can't sit here.
So
no one can tell me I can't sit here. If that's
know.
The case, then
the
I can't sit
was,
here.
The problem was,
there is no, the problem is I'm black. That's the problem. No, it really is, because I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not sitting there with a group of people. I'm sitting there by myself, not causing a problem with anyone. There isn't a sign that says this is a private area, you can't sit here. Therefore, you cannot tell me I can't sit there if I'm not doing anything wrong. What's going on, brother?
What's going on?
I got to go get my kids.
No.
Please don't touch me. Please
hey,
don't
you're
touch
gonna
me.
You're going to jail then.
No, wait,
yeah,
wait,
you're
wait.
You're going to go to jail.
I'm not doing anything yeah. wrong.
Hold on.
Can you
hold
please?
On.
No, no, come on, brother.
Hold on.
Please.
I'm not here to argue. I'm
can
not
you
your
please?
Brother.
This is assault. Can you please?
Hold on. I'm not
I'm
here
not
to argue with you.
Wrong,
put
sir.
Put your hands behind your back.
I don't. No, can you please
put
not
your hands
do
behind
this?
Your back.
I didn't do anything wrong.
Put your hands behind your back.
Come on, really? I got to go get my kids.
Put your hands behind your back. Otherwise, it's going to get ugly.
What do you need from me?
I told you.
Can you,
I
can you have him
to
let
you
me go?
And
I
identify you so
I
you
told
can settle
her
what
everything.
Happened.
I haven't done
I've
anything
told
wrong.
You. So I told you
I told
what
you.
I wanted initially.
And
that, so
I
we
was
could settle all
put your
this.
Hands behind
I
your back.
Started to.
No, I haven't done anything wrong. Please, no, don't do this. Please,
put your hands behind your back. For the program.
Put your hands behind your back. Can somebody help me? That's my kids right there. My kids are right there.
Put your hands behind your back.
Put your hands behind your back. Choke me. I have asthma, sir.
Well, you're going to get
doing
tased.
I'm not
on,
doing
right,
anything.
You're
going to
get tased.
I'm
not.
Get down. Get down.
Get down.
Get down. Get down. Get down. I'm not doing anything. Can you stop, please? Somebody help me. Someone please help me. Please help me. Please. Please help me. Can someone please help me? I haven't done anything wrong. Can someone please help me? Really?
Let me help you.
I haven't
shut
done
down.
Anything wrong.
Shut down for
a minute. I've been talking to this lady the whole walk here.
Do you have any
weapons? No, sir. I'm just trying to pick up my kids. Sir, come on now.
my voice. I didn't curse at you. I didn't do anything. Like, oh, you were out of town. Officer, I'm not going to tell you what happened.
Calm down.
This is some bull. I have marijuana on me in my pocket. I do not sell. I work. I take care of my
kids. And we care less about marijuana than we want to
have any drugs problem. What problem? I need your names, and I need your badge numbers.
Oh, yeah, all that. You're going
to have a... I told you you didn't have to touch me. I wasn't running. I wasn't going anywhere. Well, I don't have any weapons or anything. And didn't you tase me? For what? I didn't even feel that shit. For real. I could have ran. I could have. Come on. Yeah, there it is right there. Marijuana.
That was causing you to be like this?
I just got off work at 9 o'clock. I worked at Casella's. I came up here to come pick up my kids at 10 o'clock. And I get this? Racist motherfuckers. All y'all. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm a working man and I take care of my kids. And I get this? And you tase me? And you tase me? For what? I don't have any fucking weapons. You're the ones with the weapons here. Stop grabbing my dick. Are you gay? Fuck, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't break any laws and you tase me. That's assault. That's assault. Okay. It is. I didn't do anything wrong. Oh, I should. Mr. Schmidt.
Mr. Schmidt.
Yes. Yes, I sure will. I sure will, Mr. Bill. Yes, I sure will. Y'all some ass. I didn't do anything wrong.
Jeez. Yeah.
525
Can I please go get my kid? Take whatever you need to take. I didn't break any law.
Too late. You're going to jail.
How?
You're going to have to make arrangements to pick up your
kid. Why am I going to jail? What did I do?
It'll be explained to you if you would.
Are you serious?
Did I not ask you to stop and talk to me skyways ago?
Why do I have to talk? Stop. I was talking to you
because
the whole way.
Because I asked you to.
Who are you? You don't rule me. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't touch anybody. Are you fucking? I got a job that I have to maintain here.
Right.
No. Are you serious?
You're going to jail.
Because that's my bus card. I need all of that. I'm
going to get all your shit.
Are you serious? This is slavery. This is racist. It's not me because I'm black. I didn't do anything to you. My kids were dangerous. They assaulted me. They tased me. They everything.
This is